The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 18. The Perils of the Soul. Section 3. The soul as a shadow and a reflection. But the spiritual dangers I have enumerated are not the only ones which beset the savage. Often he regards his shadow or reflection as his soul, or at all events as a vital part of himself, and as such it is necessarily a source of danger to him. For if it is trampled upon, struck, or stabbed, he will feel the injury as if it were done to his person. And if it is detached from him entirely, as he believes that it may be, he will die. In the island of Wetar there are magicians who can make a man ill by stabbing his shadow with a pike or hacking it with a sword. After Sankara had destroyed the Buddhists in India, it is said that he journeyed to Nepal, where he had some difference of opinion with the Grand Lama. To prove his supernatural powers, he soared into the air. But as he mounted up the Grand Lama, perceiving his shadow swaying and wavering on the ground, struck his knife into it and down fell Sankara and broke his neck. In the Banks Islands there are some stones of a remarkably long shape which go by the name of eating ghosts, because certain powerful and dangerous ghosts are believed to lodge in them. If a man's shadow falls on one of these stones, the ghost will draw his soul out from him, so that he will die. Such stones, therefore, are set in a house to guard it. And a messenger sent to a house by the absent owner will call out the name of the sender, lest the watchful ghost in the stone should fancy that he came with evil intent and should do him a mischief. At a funeral in China, when the lid is about to be placed on the coffin, most of the bystanders, with the exception of the nearest kin, retire a few steps or even retreat to another room, for a person's health is believed to be endangered by allowing his shadow to be enclosed in a coffin. And when the coffin is about to be lowered into the grave, most of the spectators recoil to a little distance lest their shadows should fall into the grave and harm should thus be done to their persons. The geomancer and his assistants stand on the side of the grave which is turned away from the sun. And the grave diggers and coffin bearers attach their shadows firmly to their persons by tying a strip of cloth tightly round their waists. Nor is it human beings alone who are thus liable to be injured by means of their shadows. Animals are to some extent in the same predicament. A small snail, which frequents the neighborhood of the limestone hills in Perak, is believed to suck the blood of cattle through their shadows. Hence the beasts grow lean and sometimes die from loss of blood. The ancients supposed that in Arabia, if a hyena trod on a man's shadow, it deprived him of the power of speech and motion. And that if a dog, standing on a roof in the moonlight, cast a shadow on the ground and a hyena trod on it, the dog would fall down as if dragged with a rope. Clearly in these cases the shadow, if not equivalent to the soul, is at least regarded as a living part of the man or the animal, so that injury done to the shadow is felt by the person or animal as if it were done to his body. Conversely, if the shadow is a vital part of a man or an animal, it may under certain circumstances be as hazardous to be touched by it as it would be to come into contact with the person or animal. Hence the savage makes it a rule to shun the shadow of certain persons whom for various reasons he regards as sources of dangerous influence. Amongst the dangerous classes he commonly ranks mourners and women in general, but especially his mother-in-law. The Shuswap Indians think that the shadow of a mourner falling upon a person would make him sick. Amongst the Kenev Victoria novices at initiation were cautioned not to let a woman's shadow fall across them, as this would make them thin, lazy, and stupid. An Australian native is said to have once nearly died of fright because the shadow of his mother-in-law fell on his legs as he lay asleep under a tree. The awe and dread with which the untutored savage contemplates his mother-in-law are amongst the most familiar facts of anthropology. In the Yuin tribes of New South Wales, a rule which forbade a man to hold any communication with his wife's mother was very strict. He might not look at her or even in her direction. It was a ground of divorce if his shadow happened to fall on his mother-in-law, In that case he had to leave his wife, and she returned to her parents. In New Britain the native imagination fails to conceive the extent and nature of the calamities which would result from a man's accidentally speaking to his wife's mother. Suicide of one or both would probably be the only course open to them. The most solemn form of oath a New Briton can take is, "Sir, if I am not telling the truth, I hope I may shake hands with my mother-in-law." Were the shadow is regarded as so intimately bound up with the life of the man that its loss entails stability or death, it is natural to expect that its diminution should be regarded with solicitude and apprehension, as betokening a corresponding decrease in the vital energy of its owner. In Amboyne and Ulaes, two islands near the equator, where necessarily there is little or no shadow cast at noon, the people make it a rule not to go out of the house at midday, because they fancy that by doing so a man may lose the shadow of his soul. The Mangaians tell of a mighty warrior, Taketawa, whose strength waxed and waned with the length of his shadow. In the morning, when his shadow fell longest, his strength was greatest. But as the shadow shortened towards noon his strength ebbed with it, till exactly at noon it reached its lowest point. Then, as the shadow stretched out in the afternoon, his strength returned. A certain hero discovered the secret of Taketawa's strength and slew him at noon. The savage Bessisis of the Malay Peninsula fear to bury their dead at noon, because they fancy that the shortness of their shadows at that hour would sympathetically shorten their own lives. Nowhere, perhaps, does the equivalence of the shadow to the life or soul come out more clearly than in some customs practiced to this day in southeastern Europe. In modern Greece, when the foundation of a new building is being laid, it is the custom to kill a cock, a ram, or a lamb, and to let its blood flow on the foundation stone, under which the animal is afterwards buried. The object of the sacrifice is to give strength and stability to the building. But sometimes, instead of killing an animal, the builder entices a man to the foundation stone, secretly measures his body, or a part of it, or his shadow, and buries the measure under the foundation stone. Or he lays the foundation stone upon the man's shadow. It is believed that the man will die within the year. The Romanians of Transylvania think that he whose shadow is thus immolated will die within 40 days. So persons passing by a building which is in course of erection may hear a warning cry, "Beware lest they take thy shadow." Not long ago there were still shadow traders whose business it was to provide architects with the shadows necessary for securing their walls. In these cases the measure of the shadow is looked on as equivalent to the shadow itself, and to bury it is to bury the life or soul of the man, who, deprived of it, must die. Thus the custom is a substitute for the old practice of immuring a living person in the walls, or crushing him under the foundation stone of a new building, in order to give strength and durability to the structure, or more definitely in order that the angry ghost may haunt the place and guard it against the intrusion of enemies. As some peoples believe a man's soul to be in his shadow, so other, all the same, peoples believe it to be in his reflection in water or a mirror. Thus, the Andamanese do not regard their shadows but their reflections, in any mirror, as their souls. When the Motamota of New Guinea first saw their likenesses in a looking glass, they thought that their reflections were their souls. In New Caledonia the old men are of opinion that a person's reflection in water or a mirror is his soul. But the younger men, taught by the Catholic priests, maintain that it is a reflection and nothing more, just like the reflection of palm trees in the water. The reflection soul, being external to the man, is exposed to much the same dangers as the shadow soul. The Zulus will not look into a dark pool because they think there is a beast in it which will take away their reflections, so that they die. The Basatis say that crocodiles have the power of thus killing a man by dragging his reflection underwater. When one of them dies suddenly and from no apparent cause, his relatives will allege that a crocodile must have taken his shadow sometime when he crossed a stream. In Saddle Island, Melanesia, there is a pool, into which if anyone looks he dies. The malignant spirit takes hold upon his life by means of his reflection on the water. We can now understand why it was a maxim both in ancient India and ancient Greece not to look at one's reflection in water, and why the Greeks regarded it as an omen of death if a man dreamed of seeing himself so reflected. They feared that the water spirits would drag the person's reflection or soul underwater, leaving him soulless to perish. This was probably the origin of the classical story of the beautiful Narcissus, who languished and died through seeing his reflection in the water. Further, we can now explain the widespread custom of covering up mirrors or turning them to the wall after a death has taken place in the house. It is feared that the soul, projected out of the person in the shape of his reflection in the mirror, may be carried off by the ghost of the departed, which is commonly supposed to linger about the house till the burial. The custom is thus exactly parallel to the Ara custom of not sleeping in the house after a death for fear that the soul, projected out of the body in a dream, may meet the ghost and be carried off by it. The reason why sick people should not see themselves in a mirror, and why the mirror in a sick room is therefore covered up, is also plain. In time of sickness, when the soul might take flight so easily, it is particularly dangerous to project it out of the body by means of the reflection in a mirror. The rule is therefore precisely parallel to the rule observed by some peoples of not allowing sick people to sleep. For in sleep the soul is projected out of the body, and there is always a risk that it may not return. As with shadows and reflections, so with portraits. They are often believed to contain the soul of the person portrayed. People who hold this belief are naturally loath to have their likenesses taken. For if the portrait is the soul, or at least a vital part of the person portrayed, whoever possesses the portrait will be able to exercise a fatal influence over the original of it. Thus the Esquimaux of Bering Strait believe that persons dealing in witchcraft have the power of stealing a person's shade, so that without it he will pine away and die. Once at a village on the lower Yukon River, an explorer had set up his camera to get a picture of the people as they were moving about among their houses. While he was focusing the instrument, the headman of the village came up and insisted on peeping under the cloth. Being allowed to do so, he gazed intently for a minute at the moving figures on the ground glass, then suddenly withdrew his head and bawled at the top of his voice to the people, "He has all of your shades in this box." A panic ensued among the group, and in an instant they disappeared helter-skelter into their houses. The Tepehuanes of Mexico stood in mortal terror of the camera, and 5 days' persuasion was necessary to induce them to pose for it. When at last they consented, they looked like criminals about to be executed. They believed that by photographing people the artist could carry off their souls and devour them at his leisure moments. They said that, when the pictures reached his country, they would die or some other evil would befall them. When Dr. Cattard and some companions were exploring the Boro country on the west coast of Madagascar, the people suddenly became hostile. The day before, the travelers, not without difficulty, had photographed the royal family, and now found themselves accused of taking the souls of the natives for the purpose of selling them when they returned to France. Denial was vain. In compliance with the custom of the country, they were obliged to catch the souls, which were then put into a basket and ordered by Dr. Cattard to return to their respective owners. Some villagers in Sikkim betrayed a lively horror and hid away whenever the lens of a camera, or the evil eye of the box, as they called it, was turned on them. They thought it took away their souls with the pictures, and so put it in the power of the owner of the pictures to cast spells on them, and they alleged that a photograph of the scenery blighted the landscape. Until the reign of the late King of Siam, no Siamese coins were ever stamped with the image of the king, for at that time there was a strong prejudice against the making of portraits in any medium. Europeans who travel into the jungle have, even at the present time, only to point a camera at a crowd to procure its instant dispersion. When a copy of the face of a person is made and taken away from him, a portion of his life goes with the picture. Unless the sovereign had been blessed with the years of Methuselah, he could scarcely have permitted his life to be distributed in small pieces together with the coins of the realm. Beliefs of the same sort still linger in various parts of Europe. Not very many years ago, some old women in the Greek island of Carpathus were very angry at having their likenesses drawn, thinking that in consequence they would pine and die. There are persons in the west of Scotland who refuse to have their likenesses taken lest it prove unlucky, and give us instances the cases of several of their friends who never had a day's health after being photographed.